is ESPN Chicago. WNVP, WTBC, HD2 Chicago. A Good Karma Brands radio station.
This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Well, welcome in to White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. First Saturday of the offseason, you can celebrate 125 years of White Sox baseball and lock in a 2025 ticket plan today. Be here for the biggest matchups, exciting new promotions, and opening day on Thursday, March 27th. Plus, get access to the best seats at the best value, flexible payment plans, savings on single games, and more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2025. First and foremost, and more than anything else, thanks for being with us all season. I mean, I get it. 41 and 121, that is a brutal baseball season. And the White Sox, whether it be from the chairman, Jerry Reinsdorf, to the general manager, Chris Getz, to the interim manager, Grady Sizemore, to just about each and every player in that clubhouse throughout the course of the year. Len and DJ, myself, Brendan Riley, Jack McGrath, who's our producer here on White Sox Weekly. Say hi, Jack.
Hello, how's it going?
Hey, how are you? That's Jack. You're going to hear from him all winter long. Not that it's winter now. It's a gorgeous day in downtown Chicago. I don't get to come down and do shows here in the State Street Studios all that often. It's kind of a treat for me. They let me out of the perch upstairs, so I get to, you know, come around downstairs and hang out and see the windows and everything. This is cool.
Yeah, it's good to see you. Good to see you down here. We got a nice view down here.
It is.
Here in
this is
studio.
This is a tableau, is what it is. Anyway, from all of us, everybody I just mentioned, and each and every other producer at the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network, thanks for listening all year. That was a test. That was a trial that White Sox fans went through a little bit. It's a weird way to start the show, but I really couldn't think of a better way to do it than saying thank you, because I know I speak for Len and DJ when I say this, it is our like vocation, our joy. It is kind of like our life's desire to do this and talk baseball with you in the various ways that we do it, whether it's the broadcast, whether it's White Sox Weekly, the pre and the post game show, whatever it is that's going through DJ's brain at any given moment. Like, that's what we do and how we do it. And it takes you, White Sox fans, to allow us to do it. So thank you. Like, from the bottom of our hearts, thank you. Over the course of the offseason, my plan is obviously going to be to follow the news, right, and follow the big stories around the White Sox as best we can. There's going to be a managerial search, and that's where we'll start the show, actually, this afternoon. There's going to be free agency in some way or another. There will be trade rumors out the wazoo. I mean, there's going to be a ton of trade rumors surrounding the White Sox and Garrett Crochet and Luis Robert Jr. It's going to happen that way. We know that to be true, and we'll follow those things. But I thought that the most important thing to do today is look back a little bit with you. And today on White Sox Weekly, 312-332-3776, that's the phone number here on the show. Today on White Sox Weekly, we've got a cover charge to get on the show. Now, generally speaking, back in the day when I was frequenting places that put cover charges to get into a door, whatever the establishment was, you couldn't get Connor McKnight to go to a place with a cover charge to save your life. One, did not carry cash, was not interested in it. And two, the principle of the thing kind of get me. I didn't like it. But today we got a cover charge on the show. Because my question to you, and obviously you want to talk White Sox with us, this afternoon is for you. We're here until 3 o'clock. But the question is this. I want to know what thing went most wrong to you, right? That's what I want. I want to know what went most wrong from your perspective with the White Sox in 2024. However, to talk about that, you're going to have to do what we've been doing here on the network all season long to get through a 41 and 121 season. You got to give me something that went right too. That's your cover charge. Because I think that over the next couple of weeks, in going through what went wrong and identifying very clearly and as best we can what has to change for this organization, whether it be inside the clubhouse, outside of it, in the front office, all these kinds of things. And some of these issues have been addressed either by the letter issued by Jerry Reinsdorf last week, or by conversations that White Sox general manager Chris Getz has had with White Sox beat reporters or what have you. Some of these things have been addressed. We could talk about those things. But there are so many things that need to get worked on that identifying the silver linings, the things that went right from our perspective, from your perspective, I think are going to help guide us just as much. And whether those are giant things, right, like the big picture stuff of the Garrett Crochet story, or whether they are, I don't know, like a smaller issue that we saw for just a brief amount of time later in the season, like Sean Burke making three really good starts down the stretch there and looking like a guy who is just as qualified for a front run audition in 2025 in spring training to make a move to be in the rotation. I think that makes as much sense as anything else. So in keeping in good spirit or the same spirit, I'll give you mine, right? I think that's kind of how I want to start today, right? I'll give you mine. And from my end, what went most wrong with the White Sox in 2024 was the lack of overall development. Now, I mean that from a couple of different aspects, right? Now, the White Sox as a front office, as an organization, as a leadership, they identified that things weren't going the way they wanted it to with Pedro Grifol and the rest of the managerial and the rest of the coaching staff that eventually got let go. They moved on to Grady Sizemore, and will I would say more than likely, this is anything I know. This is just kind of playing the odds, right? It's like back in the day when you would get the Tiger Woods or the field bet on in a major championship, and the odds on the field are always better, right? Because there are so many more players in the field. And yes, Tiger's got a good shot as winning as anybody else, but the odds are that the field is going to win, right? Even if it is Tiger, I would say the odds are against Grady Sizemore in getting the managerial job, only because the White Sox have been very adamant that they will be going through the search. They will be assembling candidates. They will be doing all of the stuff that they've got to do in order to get this one right. And that's not to say that Grady wouldn't be the right hire. It's just to say that when you put one guy against a field of 10, 15, 20, you know, whatever it is, the odds, the likelihood decreases more and more. And when you compile that with, or compound that rather, with the lack of experience that Grady Sizemore has in managing, right? Not that he didn't get good experience down the stretch, but his experience managing with the White Sox in 2024 is very different than the experience that a guy like Terry Francona, who just got hired by the Cincinnati Reds, or Buck Showalter, who is out there and apparently angling for a White Sox job one way or another. We'll get to that report a little bit later on in the show, right? Like, it's not the same. It is apples and oranges a little bit. They're both fruits. They're both great. You can both have them for breakfast, but one does a very different job than the other, and one is, you know, it's assigned to a different task. So from that standpoint, the White Sox faced in this season, in this last year, a lack of development in a lot of different places, right? And that's not to say that there wasn't any, but the White Sox brought in, for instance, Dominic Fletcher, who had the leg up, Chris Getz said, on the right field job when spring training started. And the beginning of the year was a really difficult thing for Dominic Fletcher. Now, we saw it come on a little bit, hitting for average and playing wonderful defense in the second half of the season for the last 50 games or so, but it wasn't there at the outset. And having had it there at the outset would have, I think, begun to change where this team is now, like in this moment. I think there are other aspects of this too, right? Whether or not you want to take a look at the, you know, some of the players that got moved by the White Sox and are playing in the playoffs, you're not literally right now, although in some cases they are, but we'll be playing in the playoffs later on tonight or tomorrow or throughout the weekend. Guys like Michael Kopech did not take as big a step in the bullpen as the White Sox would have wanted, so as to recoup better assets when trading him, right? You take a look at some of the lack of development in some of the pitching areas. Now, there's been overall a really good curve toward the development of some of these pitchers. However, there are places, especially in the bullpen, where that development curve wasn't the same, and that absolutely cost the White Sox this year. Whether it was from, you know, the actual, you know, late inning leverage kind of spots, which led to and exacerbated three different losing streaks of over 12 games this year, or whether it was, you know, just short starts by guys who hit bumps in the road, which led to adding more innings on some of the bullpen arms that didn't need them, right? Or weren't ready for that kind of workload yet. All of that kind of lack of development in the 2024 season came back to hurt them a little bit, you know? And not only in a sense of what the White Sox have available to them in 2025, but I'm thinking more specifically of what they had available to them to trade and get better long-term pieces back at the deadline in 2024, in this last season. To me, that's the biggest issue with this year. To me, that's the biggest, man, I wish that had gone differently. And I get that that might not feel right to a lot of White Sox fans who sat there and listened with us to 121 losses, right? I think a lot of people, when they're pointing out what went most wrong, it's going to be the win-loss record, right? It's going to be setting the record for most losses in a regular season in the modern era, right? We talked about the 1899 Cleveland Spiders. You don't count them. That was a very different time. I understand that. I get that the loudest thing in the room is the record itself. But I guess from my perspective, you know, knowing that, you know, we'll be here next year and we'll be doing games and we'll be looking at the team, however it's going to exist, and trying to push it into the future and create that next White Sox winner, right? That's what the organization is going to be doing. That's kind of where my focus goes. And those lost opportunities, that opportunity cost of what might have been created, what might have been developed, what might have been brought back in trade, gets at me maybe more than just about anything else. And I think Chris Getz has talked about that to a certain standpoint, right? To a certain degree. You know, whether that's, you know, the Michael Kopech of things. And I know a lot of White Sox fans have, you know, honed in on Michael Kopech here in the last couple of days, last week or so, especially with the Dodgers making the playoffs and Kopech pitching so well for them and looking like the guy that we all thought was in there with the White Sox. I think that stands out in a pretty loud way. And I understand that kind of anguish, right, about not being able to get that out of the player while he was here. Or in other spots, right, where you've got some players in and around the margins. A guy like Corey Lee, who certainly for the first half of the season looked like he had taken legitimate steps offensively as well as defensively and become a guy that you could look at and go, what? That's starting catcher in Major League Baseball. That's who that is. That's one of the top 30, and that's a guy who can start. And now, to be frank about things, you know, there's a lot there, especially defensively, to work with. The latter half, especially the last 8 weeks of the season, were really difficult for Corey offensively, and you kind of wonder just how much ceiling in that bat there is. I think those kinds of things about some of the future assets, the guys who can be here for 4, 5, 6 years, it irk me a little bit more. Here's what went right, though. Here's what went right. From where I sit, one of the things that beleaguers NFL teams as they start to, you know, really get into week 4, week 5, and maybe this is my, you know, the inner Bears fan in me kind of leaping out a bit, even though they're playing a little bit better here over the last 2 weeks or so. You know, Jack, when we talk about the Bears and, you know, they're in that goal line situation where they got short yardage to go get that kind of thing, the question is, and you hear it from you know, old crusty offensive linemen, guys like Yurko who played on the other side, right? It's like, what do you do well? What's the one thing you know you can do offensively to get yourself a yard or two? And I think the Bears kind of know like what that is for them now. But for me, from the White Sox point of view, it's like, okay, what as an organization, what do you know that you do as good as anybody in baseball? And for me right now, that's develop pitching. And yeah, it's not like that's not to say that this is perfect. It's still developing pitching. And that is a difficult proposition in 2024, especially with the frequency of Tommy John surgeries and all sorts of different injuries that have beset hard and talented throwers in this game. However, if there's something that I want to hang my hat on when it comes to the White Sox organization right now, it's the development of pitching. And I think that was a standout aspect for them this year. I think that's something where they can look at other teams and go, here's something we do really well. Don't you think we've got this, you know, these three or four or five or six, you know, kind of already pre-baked pitchers ready to go that you'd like to have in your organization? I think those conversations could serve them well come the offseason. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. We're going to hear a little bit from White Sox general manager Chris Getz. Want you to hear from the farm director Paul Yonish a little bit. We played some of this during the season, but I know it's not quite the same conversation then as it is now. We'll talk about some of the rumored names that the White Sox have been searching for in their managerial search, and we'll talk about who you might want. And remember, the question out to you is this. Your show, we'll talk about whatever you want, but I'd love what went most wrong for the White Sox in 2024. But your cover charge is you also got to tell me what went most right. That's what we're doing this afternoon on White Sox Weekly. Got you till 3 o'clock. I'm Connor McKnight on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Sports on app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. Here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network, I'm Connor McKnight. Celebrate your special occasion in 2025 with a White Sox party area. Reserve your group outing today to get access to top matchups and the best spaces. For more information and to secure your group outing, visit whitesox.com/groups. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number on the show this afternoon. We'll have the phone lines in just a minute. Got a good friend hopping on the show this afternoon. 5-0 Cleveland. They lead the Tigers through three. And we'll talk about the playoff runs a little bit. I heard Peggy and Dion before we hopped on there. Dion has apparently gone full Mets fan, which is just, that is alarming to me. I mean, I'm happy for her that she's
Not a big fan of this Mets team?
No, it's not the Mets. It's not the, for me, Jack, for me, and people know this, I went to high school in Wisconsin. I worked an overnight factory job in Wisconsin during college. I had Bob Uecker on the radio each and every night. He literally saved my life. We had like a thing going on in the machine, like the paper machine that was working, the whole deal. And I'm the guy supposed to hit the stop button. And I didn't, you know, I was 19, 20 years old. I wasn't really falling asleep. It was like, you know, 10 at night. And we'd start, it was a 12-hour shift. And there it is, you know, a home run to left. I think Richie Sexton hit something and Bob Uecker's woke me up and I hit the stop button. I had no idea.
Do you root for the team that knocked your team out if you're this pseudo Brewers fan?
Yeah, no, yes and no, I guess a little bit. I think that that part of fandom has died in me just a little. But I suppose I do want the AL Central teams to do well. Like, I don't love that you've got Tigers and Guardians against each other right now. I'd like to see the paths separate and them take down individual more teams. But that's just that's a thing I have against the playoffs right now, I suppose. I don't love the format. I wish we had fewer playoff teams. I'm very, of the old school opinions I have, that one stands out the most. I don't know that I want to go back to, two teams, AL winner, NL winner, that's your World Series. I'm not there, but I want fewer playoff teams in my mix.
I would like either you have fewer playoff teams or this wild card series. It's got to be more than three games. The Brewers can't win a division and then be out after two.
That's
after
correct.
Three games.
That's
that just
correct.
Seems unfair.
Did you see, by the way, and we'll talk about this more. Did you, John Boy had the video out on Twitter.
Of him tipping pitches?
Yeah, about Devin Williams maybe tipping pitches. It's good stuff that John Boy does. End of the day, though, I thought two things about that Devin Williams changeup to Pete Alonso that was the three-run homer. And I was listening to you. I wanted so badly for Bob Uecker to get deeper playoff run. I just want more Bob Uecker in my life. That's just where it is. So Alonso hits the shot, and I'm listening to Uecker, and you just, you know, it's just devastating, and you're heartbroken if you're rooting where I was. But then I go back and I watch the pitch because I was out walking the dog when that hit. So I was just listening to the radio. So I go back and I watch I'm thinking, man, whether you're tipping or not, don't put that change up there.
It was middle.
It was right there. And if anybody's going to ride that thing out, Oppo, it's Pete Alonso, because that's all he can get to right now. It's not like he's on this homer binge. Neither here nor there, I suppose. Well, Ron knows a little bit some about it. Ron's on the south side. Good friend. Front of the line anytime he calls. Ron, appreciate you hopping in this afternoon. What is on your mind, my man?
Always a pleasure. Well, first of all, I got a different point of view from the format. Because, see, when they had the one game elimination, now, I didn't agree with that. But Connor, here's the thing. There are people who say it's a disadvantage. So if you expand it from the best of three to best of five, mm-hmm. there are people who have made the argument that's a disadvantage to a team. Now, I don't necessarily agree with that.
Yeah.
Because I think you can, you know, set your pitching up. Maybe if you have, you know, some players that got little nicks. But there are people who say that is a disadvantage. Now, we'll see how it plays out. Because the team that had a bye, kind of. So if you have to, if it goes five games and those teams have to wait, I mean, what, 7 or 8 days? So
yeah.
So, yeah. So you got, you know, it's no purpose, but the one game thing with Cheryl, but he is kind of, they tried to give the team an event. So, you know what? You have three games at home and you lost. So, I mean, come on.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's true.
What other advantage can you have? You
Fair
got
point.
Three games at home.
Fair point.
Okay.
And you know what? You know what, Ron? We're going to keep talking, but just to make the other point to this, I think I can shed a little light too. I've talked to players and coaches about this as well, and it's funny. You would expect that guys would complain a little bit about it or like have a sharper take on what they'd like to see. And some guys do, right? I think we heard Justin Verlander last year talking about formatting or somebody, if I recall. But for the most part, guys just look at you dead in the eyes and go, you know what? Then win your division, you know? Then it's on us to win the division. And I think that's true. But when you have a team like the Tigers that gets hot and makes their run in the playoffs, but doesn't get to start Tarek Skubal, right? You know, that's their disadvantage. They wouldn't, I find it difficult to believe they'd be down 5-0 to the Guardians right now if Skubal's out there dealing in game one of this series. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's never going to be a perfect format, but I'll get to the White Sox real quick. And I mean, it's very obvious. The pitching development is it looks really good. But you know what, Connor? As good as your pitching is, if you do not have that second baseman and shortstop, that infield development,
yeah,
that's the most disappointing thing. And so now, being optimistic, I'm looking forward to Colson Montgomery, Byron Ringlands. But that's the really thing. And particularly, you know, with second base, we haven't had a second baseman for years. So shortstop,
yeah.
Okay, we had Tim Anderson. But for me, I don't care how good your pitching is until you have – if you look at all the good playoff teams, they have good, very, very good shorts. You talk about Kansas City that made that miraculous turnaround. They got one of the best players in the game. What does he play? Shortstop.
That's
but
right.
All the good teams have very, very good – that's never going to change. Kind of pitching,
yep.
Shortstop, second base, and center field. So that's it. But kind of looking forward to it, and just always a pleasure talking baseball with you, and have a wonderful day.
Same to you, Ron. Same to you. Always appreciate it. Ron's been, I mean, we've been talking baseball for 15 years now in this town. Love him. I think he's absolutely right. You know, if you're going to go deep in a playoff series, I think you, deep in a season, a playoff season, that up the middle D and production is crucial. I think the exception, there are always exceptions, right? The exception that proves the rule is probably the Detroit Tigers at this point, especially when it comes to shortstop. I've been somewhat impressed with what I've seen from Trey Sweeney defensively. He's the guy that the Tigers picked up from the Dodgers and Jack Flaherty deal. He's played most of the shortstop opportunities for them since the deadline. And it's there's something there. But right now he's hitting .800, you know, in front of Jake Rogers, the catcher. That offense is not good. You know, the Tigers offense, especially when you look at the rest of the playoff teams, it's not been great. It's kind of two dudes in Riley Green and Colt Keith. I suppose Kerry Carpenter a little bit too. But I would much rather be other squads in this bracket, on this side of the bracket especially, than the Detroit Tigers right now. And yet here they are, having gone through the Astros and won themselves a playoff series. Now down 5-0 to the Guardians in the ALDS in game number one. Back out to the phone lines we go. 312-332-3776. That's the number in Glendale Heights. It's Tom. Tom's on White Sox Weekly. What's up, Tom?
Hey, Connor. Good to talk to you. It's been a while. So let's start with the good, right? The White Sox have some of the best collection of pitching talent in all of baseball. If you, and I am cheating a little bit because I'm going to include Cannon and Thorpe, but if you were to rank farm systems based off of pitching, the White Sox may be number one. Now, if you want to say Pittsburgh, because if you want to cheat and say Paul Skeens, yeah, you know, I can make that. I'm not going to fight with you, but in terms of depth with Cannon, Thorpe, you mentioned Sean Burke, but also too, I mean, Connor, did you watch the Futures game? Did you get a chance to watch that?
I ended up going back and having it with the schedule and everything, and also that was like the day for me to hang out with my daughter. I didn't go back and watch highlights of it, you know, because the Futures game is right there, but on the All-Star break. Yeah. But yeah, I watched some highlights.
So, I mean, like, Noah Schultz did not look good in that one inning. No. He pitched. He didn't. But I don't care about one inning. I mean, you know, let the kid grow a little bit. But they said it on the broadcast. Next season, he'll be the number one pitching prospect in all of baseball. And because you also drafted Hagen Smith, which I absolutely love that pick, you may have potentially next season after that the best pitching prospect in all of baseball. The White Sox are loaded with pitching, and that's a good thing. That is a foundation to build on. The problem is everything else.
Yeah.
Let's start with, just bad. Like, one, Pedro Grifol was a terrible manager, and if you believe that maybe Chris Getz was not allowed to fire him because of money reasons, that's a problem too. Another problem, let's pick the one thing I'm really mad about right now, and it may seem like small and like a little tiny detail, but it speaks to the overall organizational health. And I'll say this. So the White Sox currently right now, and they have until December 15th to spend just under $1 million in international bonus pool money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the White Sox are going to say, well, we don't have anybody to sign. And my immediate question to that is, why the hell do you not have anybody to sign? What are you doing? Sign me a 17-year-old kid out of Venezuela for that money. I don't care. Spend that money. Spend that money every single year.
Yeah.
The White Sox have been doing better in drafting. And I'll say this too, Connor. There are two guys in this organization that I do trust. Hopefully a third guy, not sure yet, not going to make that decision yet. But the two guys I currently trust right now are Bannister, and I really like Mike Shirley. He's the guy who got me Crochet.
Yeah.
You know, Deke Colson Montgomery, Noah Schultz.
And Schultz, that's right.
I didn't love the Jacob Gonzalez draft pick, but who knows now. It might be different now that Kenny and Rick are finally out of here. So here's the question, though. It's, can you continue to spend money internationally? And I heard Chris Getz talk about how we're going to develop in that. That's fine, but you currently have just under $1 million right now to spend. And if you don't spend that money, I have to question, why are you cutting those corners, which he talks about all the time. They're not going to cut corners. This is a corner you can't cut.
Yeah, Tom, this is a really interesting point. I appreciate the phone call, my man. I'm going to get to that on the other side of the break and kind of explain this a little bit, because Tom is a very plugged in and very smart baseball dude when it comes to some of the nuances here. We've talked a couple of times here on White Sox Weekly, but there's just a little bit of explainer, I think, that goes along with some of the things Tom's talking about. I want to make sure we fully do that. And we're up against a break, and Jack McGrath's going to reach through the glass and probably try and pummel me a little bit if we're any later to the commercial than we need to be. So we're going to get to explain a little bit of that on the other side. We'll talk about David Keller, who's the new director of international scouting some, and how that changes where the White Sox or what the White Sox business plan kind of is from that perspective, too. So we'll do all that when we come back. Appreciate you, Tom, for hopping in. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. You got White Sox Weekly.
We are talking White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly.
If you missed the show, we put the podcast up on the ESPN Chicago app. So listen on your time.
White Sox Weekly. ESPN Chicago. Chicago's home for sports.
Sox fans, sign up to become a White Sox insider for updates on the 125th year anniversary celebration next season. Get all the latest updates on games, promos, breaking team news, and other exciting Sox content delivered free to your inbox. Visit whitesox.com/insider today. Speaking of being an insider, Tom from Glendale Heights called in the show just a couple of minutes ago, if you're just joining us. And 312-332-3776, that's the phone number. Tom was answering the question that we've got out for you here this afternoon. Of course, you want to talk anything White Sox, MLB, we're here for you. Your show, not really ours. But the question to you is, what went most wrong for the White Sox in 2024? But the cover charge is, you got to tell me something that you thought went right. You know, I think it's only fair if we're going to sit here and do this for 2 hours and think about that season, which was a really difficult season. We got to talk about both things a little bit. Otherwise, I'm going to go home and we're going to make dinner with Clara, and I'm going to be upset, and then she's going to be upset, and then bedtime's going to be, really, you're ruining bedtime for my daughter. That's really what it is. So let's have both things, right? The up and the down the good and the bad. What Tom had been pointing out as his I guess you'd call it a bugaboo, right? The stick that was really stuck in his craw here was the international signing money. So just a little bit of an explainer here, and just a small one. I don't mean to say that we're going to cover everything, but you get X amount of dollars in the international signing pool. You spend them by, like Tom was saying, December 15th. That money goes away and or resets and or decreases depending on whether you go over that by a certain allotment, you lose some of the pool, or you can trade for bonus money pool too, right? It's kind of this nebulous amount of, it's not nebulous, but it's this variable amount of money that each team has to sign international prospects. It does, though, you know, it's kind of a use it or lose it situation. I forget which one, whether it's the FSA or the HSA, and I shouldn't be talking about HR issues, but one of the two goes away after you don't use it for a little while. Sox have about a million out there, it sounds like. And again, the reporting on this could be a little delayed too. So we don't know exactly what is and what isn't, or what hasn't been spent, right? But it sounds like there's some cash left over. And Tom makes a fair point. Spend it on somebody. If you don't use it, you lose it. I get that. You want more players, especially with where the White Sox are relative to their, you know, compete window. You need more young talent. Almost doesn't matter where, you know, you're signing 17 and 18 year old players for the most part here to make future bets on. I hate talking about players like they're just like stocks and stuff, but I suppose at a certain level, that is the conversation, gross as it is at times, but that's what we're doing here. That's what we're talking about. Then the White Sox signed Eduardo Herrera, a third baseman out of Venezuela, for $1.8 million this last year. Judrick Profar, I believe is how you say his first name, Jurickson's younger brother. Shortstop out of Curacao, and there are some other, you know, fairly notable signings. But $1.8 million is the big number, right? And I don't think that there are, to the best of my knowledge, prospects out there left in this international signing period that would warrant, you know, spending the whole million on. You could probably get around to a four or five players if you wanted to spread that differently. However, the White Sox made a change in their international scouting department. David Keller, who was a scout for the Mets most recently and had been in a couple of front offices with some high repute. He was in and around the Theo Epstein front office for a little while and in some other places as well. It sounds like he's got a pretty well-rounded experience in terms of his exposure to different kinds of front offices, from what I can tell. Haven't had a chance to talk to him yet or meet him, but I'm looking forward to the opportunity to do so. Anyway, Keller gets brought on to replace Marco Patti, who moves on to other opportunities. And Marco certainly had left his mark with the White Sox, especially with a lot of notable signings out of Cuba. Jose Abreu and Luis Robert Jr., just to name a few. Brian Ramos. You know, it had been a largely Cuban contingent that Marco Patti was bringing into the White Sox organization. And if not that, then certainly of the guys that made it, you know, to impact positions, but either as prospects or as MLB players, largely Cuban. They have, the White Sox, reinvested in their international their facilities, I suppose, is probably the best way to put it, or at least that's the word that hopped into my brain while I stuttered there for a good 30 seconds, and have committed themselves to doing that and building that out in a more robust way. That's all very well and good. Now, Keller is not the only guy that the White Sox are bringing in to revamp this international scouting department. There are others. They're going to work under him. I'm looking forward to hearing some from Chris Getz when we get to the winter meetings, or perhaps even before that, about how the arrangement is going to work. It kind of sounds to me like this is a general manager of international, I don't know, call it affairs or signings or whatever, that Keller is kind of going to run as, and then he will have, you know, essentially a manager or a level underneath of that to go ahead and procure scouts and scout players and do all these other things that you do. So I would just say this, I guess, to Tom's overall complaint as we kind of explain the situation some. Yeah, fair. Totally get it. Use it or lose it. And you're in a scenario where you need as many players, as many prospects, as many potential avenues to talent as you can get. Yeah, bring them in. However, with a new director on the international side and what will likely be a brand new philosophy about how they're evaluating these international players, these young players in Venezuela, in Dominican Republic, in Cuba, and other Latin American countries, and certainly in the Pacific as well. Right, it doesn't just stop there. The White Sox and not many teams, some teams have begun to, you know, over the last 10 years, really establish a presence in the Pacific a little bit. But most teams, or at least half of the league, is still really working to get themselves out there and procure some talent from there. That needs to be developed a lot by the White Sox as well. You've got until, like Tom said, December 15th to spend that particular sum, and it is entirely possible that Keller arrives in the situation, or, you know, some of his lieutenants arrive on the scene with some really good ideas on how to allot those funds and what players could fit well into the back end, the back few weeks of this international signing period. I think that's entirely possible and would not be completely surprised if that were the case. I'm glad that Tom took us into the weeds a little bit on that, because I hadn't necessarily scheduled the time to talk about the international department for the White Sox and how it is changing and that it is changing, which I think is a very it's a good thing for the White Sox to get into how this needs to go from here on out and address the issues that they felt needed addressing on that side of the baseball operation standpoint. Because while it is true that we as White Sox observers are not going to see the fruits of those efforts for years at the major league level, more than likely, it is also very true that that must be done and needs to be done at the standards, the highest levels that other organizations are competing in. Otherwise, you are just shutting off a talent avenue for very little reason. The White Sox, led by Chris Getz in this situation, seem dedicated to doing so. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. We'll get to Mike in Lincoln Square when we come back after a quick break. Mike, I would imagine there's a little bit of traffic if you're driving through Lincoln Square, so just hang on, squeeze through that next red light, and we'll bring you on when we come back. It's White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Welcome in back, rather, to White Sox Weekly. I suppose if you're just tuning in, it works either way. I'm Connor McKnight. Got you till 3 o'clock this afternoon, 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. The other voice you're hearing most of the day is Jack McGrath, our producer, and we've been taking phone calls this afternoon. I guess the general idea is I'd love to hear from you about what you thought went most wrong in the 2024 season, but in order to do that, in order to pile on, I've got to hear what you thought also went most right in 2024. I think that's a fair ask. Is it difficult? Yes. But that's why you're calling White Sox Weekly, and that's why we're here. 312-332-3776. Out in Lincoln Square, it is Mike. Hopefully you scooped up a good sandwich out in that neighborhood, because, man, are there good sandwich shops in Lincoln Square. What's up, dude?
Connor, before I forget, you got to syndicate your McKnight at the Movie Show. It's awesome.
Oh, every thanks, week. Man. Look, I appreciate it. I really appreciate it. It's a lot of fun to do. I never quite know what I'm doing until we start digging in the movie.
It's always fantastic.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Mike.
Anyway, I don't know too much about baseball to say here's what I didn't like about it, other than I don't like losing. But I had three different things I wanted to bring up because I love your question. Three different things I thought went well for the White Sox this year, and
okay.
I'll tell you why.
All right.
First thing that I thought of, Corey Lee. If he doesn't get that, and I forget the guy who's probably going to be a Hall of Fame manager, but he was a catcher who's probably past his prime this year, and he started most of the games in April and early May.
Oh, Martin Maldonado, sure.
Thank you. But Maldi actually showed Corey Lee how to be a big league catcher, I believe, or added to what he already knew about doing that. And I think we have a very, very good starting catcher coming back. He's going to be a veteran next year. That's going to be an entirely different thing than a guy who's, you know, in his first real full rookie season. So I'm excited about Corey Lee coming back. Number two, I really like the fact that Getz and company invested in having a guy like Tommy Pham, a 35-year-old, a guy who's a veteran, in the clubhouse, day in and day out, showing the young guys, this is how you get ready for a game. I can't quantify it for you, but I can tell you, having been around veteran players before in different sports, when you see somebody who's doing it the right way, it rubs off on you. Whether you know it or not, you pick up on all the little details. And I'm sure that's going to help out at least one or two of the guys, younger guys. And the third one, whatever they said to Gavin Sheets in the offseason, that guy came prepared in 24 to play. He didn't get a shot right away. He was patient. But when he got his shot, the guy got up there, and he's a solid left-handed bat. Is he going to be an all-star? MVP? Probably never. But if we get to be a playoff team ever, you got to have 12 guys who can play. And I think Gavin can be one of those guys. So those are the three things I really enjoyed about the season.
All right, Mike, appreciate you, man. Thanks so much. Good phone call. I want to go to the Corey Lee part of the conversation first, because I think a lot of fans really kind of find themselves gravitating to Corey and the way he plays the game. I think anytime you've got a catcher who takes beating the way Corey does and gets back up and keeps on fighting is pretty impressive. There was a spot late in the season. I really like talking with Corey. I think Corey's an interesting guy to talk baseball with. And I'll tell you, something Mike said is absolutely true, or at least from my perspective, must be true, because Corey said it a ton to me, and he said it a ton on the pregame show this season too. But all that to say, Corey took a foul ball off the right knee, I want to say about 3 weeks before the end of the season. I was calling a game with DJ. It happened. It took him a long time to get back to the plate and haul himself up and brush himself down and, just kind of get back to playing. He finished out that ball game. I think he sat out the next one, but was right back in. It was day game after night game and the whole thing. And I remember asking Corey, so night game, he gets hit in the knee. Day game, Chucky Robinson starts the next one. And then night game the day after, he's back in for game three of the series. And I asked Corey before that third game, hey, did you sit yesterday because of the thing? You got hit on the knee. It looked like it was really hurtful and all that kind of stuff. And he goes, I got what? I'm like, Corey, remember you hit in the knee with a baseball. It found the seams in the knee pads. You were down for like 20 minutes. It was a whole thing. Fans were holding their breath, thinking your leg fell off. And I have no recollection of this whatsoever. I don't remember it. I mean, the guy just shakes it off. He's just that kind of dude. And I appreciate that. I dig that in a ball player, especially in a catcher. Now, I will say this too. Corey did, and I think regardless of, or maybe in spite of what has been reported, and I think the reports are worth reading and worth listening to, it was absolutely difficult for him in that first part of the season, not getting the playing time that he wanted. And I just mean that from a competitive standpoint, right? He's got Martin Maldonado in front of him. Pedro Grifol clearly liked playing Martin Maldonado for a bunch of different reasons that he listed and stood by for the entirety of his tenure with the White Sox this last year. And he had his reasons for it. But that doesn't mean that Corey, as a competitor, as a guy who's looking to make a living playing this game, needs to like any of it. However, regardless of whether he did or didn't, and he wouldn't say one way or the other, he's too good a guy to do that. But what he did say was, I learned a ton from Martin and from Pedro and from the rest of the coaching staff that helped me along the way to learning how to be a starting catcher in this game. There wasn't, I don't know that there was one conversation that I had with Corey, and I had a good number of them, especially on the pregame show that we aired for you before every baseball game this year, where he didn't take a moment to point out the guys that had taught him the way to do this along the way. And I think, when Mike is talking about Tommy Pham and bringing in a veteran to kind of be that guy in the clubhouse, I think as fans, especially, the more analytically inclined of us, and I include myself in this, we have a tendency, especially in baseball, more than probably other sports, because there's so many games and it's just so much easier, or maybe even simpler is the way to put it, to kind of like break down a team and understand what the strengths and weaknesses are by just looking at the box scores or the baseball reference pages or the FanGraphs articles and stuff, and think that we've got the full handle on that ball club. And while those tools, websites, and articles do a lot to get you there, there's nothing quite like having those conversations or reading those conversations from your local beat reporters to bring you into that clubhouse a little bit. And when it comes to Tommy Pham or a lot of other veteran additions in clubhouses throughout Major League Baseball, that impact is real. And it's something that I am absolutely guilty of forgetting about at times, because this is a game. I'm a millennial baseball fan. I came up in the early 2000s. I read Moneyball, and that was my ticket into the ball game. Right, the whole deal. I'm absolutely guilty of spending you know, a good 5 to 10 years thinking about players as just stat lines and just, you know, amalgamations of skill sets and on base percentages. And it took working in this game a little bit for me to hit the reset button some and hear guys like Darren Jackson saying they're people. They learn how to do things and they don't learn how to do things that help them along the way. All of that stuff matters. And I think when, you know, Mike is kind of pointing out Tommy's impact on here's how you prepare for games. Here's what you can do to tackle this way. What are you looking for? The hitters meetings that you're in. And you, maybe a coach goes around the room and says, hey, we're facing Tarek Skubal today. He's the toughest son of a gun in the American League. Good luck hitting this guy. What's your plan? And maybe that player, maybe that young guy doesn't have a plan for attacking Tarek Skubal today. But when you get down to Tommy Pham or a guy, or a veteran like Tommy who understands what it's like to get ready, he's going to say, listen, I'm tossing out this pitch. I can't hit the changeup. I want something up. And if it's a little off speed, if it's a little slider that backs up just a little bit outside, I'm going to rip this thing into the corner. That's how I'm attacking, or whatever it is, right? And those kinds of experience in your meetings lets that guy know that was just going up there and thinking, man, Tarek Skubal, I'm lucky to get one off the end of the bat and call it a 1-for-4 today, man. I mean, that lets you know, no, there are ways to go get these guys. There are ways to alter that mindset a little bit and go into that game thinking, I'm the baddest son of a gun out here. I'm going to go get Tarek Skubal today. I don't care how good he's been pitching lately. I'm going to go get my 2-for-4. And that kind of thing. I definitely think that rubbed off on in the White Sox clubhouse. And I'm very curious to see, because I would imagine that most of the additions for the White Sox are going to be, you know, of two categories. One, young players that you can kind of, you know, essentially you're taking flyers on, right? Guys that you're looking for a little bounce back from, or flip candidates, right? Guys that you want to rebuild a little bit, revamp a little bit. Your Eric Fetties of the world that will be leaving. However, there's going to be a veteran guy or two, perhaps, brought in, whether it be in spring training or afterwards, that are going to be either there until the deadline or there throughout the whole thing that are meant to be leaders for the young players that will break camp for the first time or arrive later on in the season. And that kind of impact and that kind of chemistry matters. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. What went most wrong? But what went most right for the 2024 White Sox? Those are the two questions to you. I want both answers, and we got a whole hour left to do it here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
This is ESPN Chicago, WNVP, WTBC, HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station. Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000. 1000.
White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight. Thanks for joining us today. Hour two of the program this afternoon. This, I feel like we probably should do a little housekeeping here, Jack. We haven't done this yet, and I always forget in our last two-hour show of the season to kind of like remind people where we're going to be and when we're going to be during the offseason. From my understanding, we're going to be on from 1 to 2 every Saturday from here until the start of the regular season. We're going to be with you through spring training. We got the pre and the post game shows, all of it here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. But this is our last 2-hour show of the year. I love the 2-hour wrap up that we get to do at the end of the season. I'll be honest with you, coming in to do the show today and yesterday, kind of doing some prep and getting ready for things, I thought, man, 2 hours. This is a tough show to do for us, I think, because this was a tough season for the White Sox at 41-121, and I. You know, Jack texted me, I think it was, what, last night or this morning, hey, what are you looking for from the show? And I kind of thought, okay, let's get some stuff from Chris Getz, let's get some stuff from Paul Janisch. We'll get to that a little bit later. But man, I mean, we just cruised through the first hour of the show with a couple of callers talking about what went wrong, what went right for the White Sox. And there are enough stuff, enough things to point out that mattered a lot in this season that, I don't know, it's just kind of nice to kind of look back in that way as opposed to kind of wallowing, I guess, at 41-121, right? I mean, it's a better first hour, thanks to everybody listening, than it was for you and me, anyway.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah. But there's been, there was some good things to point out from this season.
There
which
were.
I think our callers have been good to point out those good as well.
And I think they're, they're fair in pointing out some of the nuanced things that the White Sox are looking to improve on and get better a little bit. So, you know, today 1-3, next week and the weeks after, up until the regular season, 1-2 here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. We're downtown in the State Street Studios, looking out at a beautiful Saturday afternoon here in downtown Chicago. Two weddings, I think, going on, right? Or wedding photos going on right now. And, man, you talk about a roll of the dice. October 5 in Chicago for a wedding day, and you get this? Good on you. That is well done. Happy for you all. Happy for you, too, because you get to call in and listen to White Sox Weekly today. I want to get to the managerial search a little bit because we had some news over the last couple of days and some reports coming out here as well that I think really surprised me, for one, and also on the other side didn't surprise me yet. Terry Francona's back. Terry Francona spent 1 year not managing the Cleveland Guardians. Steven Vogt stepped in and did, by all accounts, a very good job managing a Guardians team that got off to a fantastic start, was hitting for a ton of power, especially relative to what the Cleveland Guardians have hit for power-wise in the last, 15 years? I mean, you got to go back to the Manny Ramirez, Jim Thome, 97 Cleveland teams to find any real power there. I mean, and they did that this year. Now, that trailed off in the second half. And their starting pitching got really beat up. Tristan McKenzie goes back down to the minors. Tanner Bibee's a guy starting game number one for them. You know, the whole thing, I mean, it's just, it did not go for the Guardians how they thought it would go this year. But credit to Steven Vogt for getting through a season and right now with a 5-0 lead in the bottom of the sixth against the Tigers in game one of the ALDS. Francona's back. He's going to manage the Cincinnati Reds. Now, that's an interesting one for me. I had thought, and I think a lot of people had talked when it came to the wish list of who the White Sox would bring in as their new manager. I don't know that I talked to anybody that didn't say, well, listen, if Terry Francona is interested, I'm interested, right? I think every White Sox fans that I heard from would have loved an interview with Terry Francona if this was a situation that he was interested in. I think it will be very intriguing over the next couple of days. And I think perhaps tomorrow, when a guy like Bob Nightingale of USA Today comes out with a Sunday column and has the bullet point notes toward the bottom about all the little things he knows about what, if anything, got talked about between Francona and the White Sox. The Reds and the White Sox right now are the only two, well, I suppose a couple of days ago, were the only two teams with open managerial positions. I'm cutting a corner there because we all know Skip Schumacher is not going back to the Miami Marlins and they do have an opening. But technically right now, so it's an open managerial position. It's the White Sox, it's the Marlins, and that's it. So I think the next question is, okay, whether Francona was or wasn't interested in the White Sox, can you look at the Cincinnati Reds and see why one made sense over the other? I mean, I can, right? And I don't think that's really anybody's fault at this point either. I don't know that you could say, well, you got to do anything you can to land Terry Francona in this situation. I don't know that there is much more that the White Sox could have done to make this landing spot a better one, right? I mean, it's an organization that is in need of a whole lot of change and a whole lot more talent in the pipeline. That much is very clear. And it's been talked about pretty soberly by Chris Getz, by Paul Janisch, by the chairman, Jerry Reinsdorf, in the statement that he released. And we read for you on White Sox Weekly last week, the whole thing, right? Like, this is known. And the Reds are much, much closer to being what they want to be and making a postseason, right? I mean, they had the run last year and fell short in Joey Votto's final year. You've got a guy like Ellie De La Cruz. You've got players coming back from injury in Matt McClain. You've got a good, you know, kind of amalgamation of pitching. Hunter Green seemed to take a good step this last year. It's a very different situation. And when you're Terry Francona, and at the age he is, with the experience he's got, with the health issues that he has, you want something that's a lot closer, I would imagine, than a playoffs. You would want something that's a lot closer. I get that. Now, the next questions, I think, for me, managerial-wise, are going to be what names kind of pop out as favorites for this job. And not guys that you're going to hear – how do I put this? Not guys that you're going to hear is like, oh, you know, he could be an interesting guy, or this could be a fit, or that, yeah, that sort of stuff. Because those are the things that are going to happen first. We've heard from notable, prominent, very smart baseball reporters here in this town about some of those names. I'm talking about that next step, right? Once we start to get the White Sox reaching out to those candidates, you know, how it feels coming back, what those interviews are going to look like, stuff like that. I'm interested to see kind of what this next round looks like, especially as teams begin to fall out of the playoffs a little bit. Because the one thing Chris Getz has been pretty adamant about is that the managerial search, at least the timeline of it, will be respectful to other teams in Major League Baseball, and that makes sense. Here's a little bit from Getz now, actually.
We're not rushing into anything. You know, as we reach the end of the season and contact other clubs and working through a permission process, we're going to be able to work at a White Sox pace. Obviously, you're at the mercy of other clubs that potentially are in the playoffs, and you want to respect those situations. You know, for timeline wise, I would expect, you know, certainly at some point late October, early November.
That's Getz. I believe that was the day. Yeah, that was the morning or afternoon before that Angels game, the first of the three Angels games. All wins for the White Sox at Guaranteed Rate Field, last homestand of the series. So, you know, we didn't know what the playoff field looked like at that point. That's why he's talking about it that way. Just one other quick one from Getz here. He mentioned some other priorities, top priorities for the White Sox this offseason, or at least immediately here now that the season has ended, outside of that managerial search.
You know, we're looking at a handful of different processes. We brought in David Keller, who's going to help along with Luis Silverio. They're going to team up on an international side, and we're building out an evaluation and development process with them, with that current group, or that the group that we have now. We're looking to improve our analytic group. You know, we've identified areas that need to be more emphasized to allow us to develop players and identify players and acquire players. And that's the focus for this offseason, to continue to build on that.
So that's another big one for me in this offseason, for sure. And again, what Getz is talking about in that cut specifically are areas that the White Sox must improve upon, right? Because you have to keep on keeping up with everybody else in baseball. And that's a constant process, right? Even your quote unquote cutting edge analytics teams are still pushing the envelope to keep ahead of the other teams that they themselves are pushing the envelope, right? I mean, that's just is what it is. I'm very interested to see where the White Sox go in terms of their analytics department. I believe in it. I think it's a thing that absolutely informs decisions in Major League Baseball. And on the other side of things, I think it is just as important in this game, in this day and age, in this era of baseball, to have an analytics department and a scouting department that can work together. There are too many reports that we've seen over the last couple of weeks around other franchises where you've seen scouts and the scouting departments. The scouts get let go in the scouting department. They're not filling those scouting positions. They kind of want to scout on computers. And for some of these organizations and for some of those processes and for some of those players, that can work. For my money, more is better. For my money, a combination of both that scouting and those analytics, preferably scouts with a great handle on how the analytics work, would be how I'd love to evaluate and bring in some of those players on the amateur side of things. Makes a lot of sense to me. So I'll be very interested to see, who that, whatever the titles ended up, head of analytics or chief nerd or top math guy. I'm happy to invent a title for him. I don't know that Chris is going to be texting me after the show and letting me know that, hey, I nailed it, and that's going to be the title for our new dude. Numbers guru? That would be fine, too. I like that.
I liked Math Nerd more.
Math Nerd.
Yeah, that one stuck with me.
Chief Math Nerd. I'd like that one. That'd be good on the door, you know. You know where you are, the offices. The other chief math nerd, he's right there. I'd be fine with that. I want to see that brought to that next level. And that's actually one of the areas. I don't want to read. We've read the whole statement for you from Chairman Jerry Reinsdorf in last week's White Sox Weekly. You've seen it printed. You've seen it put up on Twitter or Instagram or whatever. The White Sox put it out there, too. If you're interested and haven't seen the entire thing, it's worth reading. I thought he did two things in releasing that statement. One is take blame for what has happened. There was not a lot of mincing of words. And two, promise that words are words and actions are actions. And the actions that we can point to that the White Sox have taken now, or maybe even more accurately are taking, are the managerial search and the improvement of that analytics department, right? I mean, those are the two things. Oh, and the international scouting department as well, but we talked about that earlier in the show. Those are things that are being done. And as a good friend of mine in this town liked to say before he skedaddled out east, trust actions, right? Actions over words. And I think you're seeing those actions play out a little bit here. And that's an important thing to note for the White Sox as they go from 2024 into 2025. I think the next steps are going to be a lot more than just setting, than just the normal season-to-season moves, right? That's what it feels like to me. And that's what it feels like Chris Getz is kind of setting us up for here. And while, yeah, that probably means the big-time free agency additions and, you know, immediate fixes, right, aren't going to be the main focuses of the White Sox from this season to next. Who knows? We could be wrong. And who knows? Some of the signings that they see as, you know, things that could add around the margins could really hit and could be impact guys for them. It's entirely possible. You could see that if the White Sox were in probably a different spot, right, and they made the, you know, the flyer signing of Eric Fetty. I mean, shoot, that guy's a three in the rotation. Locked down and solid. You're good to go. Hand him a playoff start if you get there. But that's not the way the season went, and obviously things had to be run. They identified that kind of player and brought them in. I think these next steps are going to be very big for the White Sox, even if they are going to take some time to bring fruits to the major league level. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. We'll get back to the managerial search, talk a little bit more about the minor leagues as well. We played a cut or two of this 2 weeks ago when Paul Janisch spoke to White Sox beat reporters, but just on two, maybe three individual players, I think it's worth hearing again. We'll do that when we come back about some of the top prospects in the White Sox system. I'm Connor McKnight. You got White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Welcome back. It's White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. Here with you until 3 o'clock. Talking White Sox. Really, it's your show, 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. Question for you today is a fairly simple one. It does have two parts, a cover charge. I want to know the thing that went most wrong to you in 2024, but in order to give me that, listen, there's a lot of those. It's a 41-121 season. We don't have to hide about that. We can talk about that. It's okay. This is therapy for me as much as it is anybody else. But I got to know the thing that went most right to you as well. I want two parts, both sides of that coin. 312-332-3776. That's the number. One of the things that is going to be the big storyline, or maybe even the biggest storyline for the White Sox for a little while here, is going to be the managerial search. And before we get to some of the stuff that Paul Janisch, farm director, was talking about with particular prospects in the White Sox system, I wanted to get to two more little nuggets about that White Sox managerial search. One is from Bob Nightingale in his USA Today column, Sunday column, where he writes some real good stuff league-wide, kind of rounds up. In this particular one, he went through all of his picks for the end-of-season awards, right? Your NL MVP, your AL MVP, your Cy Youngs, and all that kind of stuff. And some other things, too, right? Like best trade, best free agent signing, all this other stuff. But then he's got little nuggets at the end of the column, as he always does. Few things here as it regards managers. One, Skip Schumacher, who officially informed the Marlins and his players that he had no interest in returning before departing Friday for a family emergency, is the number one target of the Cincinnati Reds. Now, this was written before Terry Francona was hired by the Reds. Former Cubs manager David Ross also expected to be interviewed. I'm sure he was, and I'm sure that he gave a good interview. I like David Ross. That's nugget number one in Nightingale's story here. The other that involved the White Sox are as follows. It's time that Carlos Beltran, a special assistant with the New York Mets, who beat the Brewers, receives interviews from teams seeking a manager. He'd be a good fit with the White Sox if they don't retain Grady Sizemore. And then this also, as it kind of tangentially involves the White Sox. While the Pittsburgh Pirates released Rowdy Tellez last week, just four plate appearances short of reaching a $200,000 bonus, another team shelled out $250,000 at a time they're looking to cut costs. The Chicago White Sox, who set the all-time record with 121 losses, permitted veteran Chris Flexen, who finished the season 3-15 with a .495 earned run average, to make a final start this past week. Flexen pitched 6 1/3 shutout innings. He was great, giving him exactly 160 innings for the season, triggering a $250,000 incentive. In what has been a living nightmare for the White Sox, kudos to general manager Chris Getz and interim manager Grady Sizemore for doing the right thing. That's from Bob Nightingale's Sunday column this last Sunday. Look forward to the next one. And I think two things about that particular Chris Flexen start that I really liked and was very clearly endorsed by the White Sox front office and coaching staff. One, that start, he didn't have to go back out for that third of an inning, right? I mean, they could have called it. They might not have thrown him in that seventh inning. Needed the out to get to 160. He also needed that out to get the ERA under 5. He let up two base runners after that. And if I recall correctly, Gus Varland was the reliever that came in afterward. Had Gus allowed those runners to score, even one of them, the ERA would have bumped back over 5. And yeah, I'm sure Chris Flexen is enjoying the $250,000 that he earned in incentives by pitching to 160 innings. I am also pretty certain that he feels a lot better about this tough 2024 season with an ERA at 4.95 as opposed to 5.01. Does it matter a ton? No, but to him, I think it probably does. So kudos, like Nightingale pointed out, to the White Sox coaching staff and to Flexen for getting 6 1/3 scoreless against the Angels in his final start of 2024. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. Oh, one more. We'll get to Tom and Crest Hill in just a second, because there was one more managerial nugget that I wanted to get to, and it was from Keith Law in The Athletic. And he wrote that Buck Showalter is angling for the managerial job in Chicago. Showalter's 68, 22 years as a manager, the Yankees, the Diamondbacks, the Rangers, the Orioles, and the Mets. He has been part of turnarounds before, and in talking with people who know the game and have been with managers, I think they would qualify some of the managers they were with as guys a little bit like Buck Showalter, guys who have reputations for having a bit of an edge at times, not an unhealthy edge, but an edge for sure. There's an endorsement of that idea for a guy like Buck Showalter, because I think when you look back at some of the conversations that Chris Getz ended up having with White Sox beat reporters toward the end of the year, our own Jesse Rogers of ESPN 1000 pointed this out to Getz, and they talked about it pretty frankly during his last press conference. Jesse put it to him, what do you attribute some of the mistakes that have been made over the course of the year? Because while there has been development and you've had some things go wrong, there have certainly been, and Getz talked about it, Grady talked about it, Pedro talked about it before he was let go. There are places on the diamond where that development, where that, better play defensively, certainly didn't get to a point they wanted to last year. Showalter is the kind of guy who has the reputation of making sure that those things get done right. Now, just because he has that reputation or has done it in the past doesn't mean that it's going to work the same way as it had in other places. Just look across the diamond, at least in that last series for the White Sox at home. Ron Washington has a very similar reputation. Not in terms of the edge he carries, very much a player's guy, but things get done right when you've got Ron Washington. There were some pop-ups dropped by the Angels. There were some weird things that happened all year with the Angels, and I don't know that Ron Washington was very clear. It wasn't his fault. So it's not a panacea. It doesn't immediately cure everything that's going on with the org or what have you, but I would be very interested in seeing Buck Showalter interviewed by the White Sox for those reasons. Out to Crest Hill we go. 312-332-3776. That's the number. And Tom is on White Sox Weekly. Another Tom. Good to have you, man. What's up?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Connor.
You got it.
Hey, we talked about all the bad things that happened in 2024 with the White Sox, and I've been a fan since I've been alive. I was born in 1988. Got to live through some of the fun early 90s teams, and then obviously 2000 and 2005 and so on. My thing, and I'm trying to buy into what Jerry has said about trying to do things differently.
Yeah.
It's tough for me to really believe that he's going to all of a sudden now, after 42 or 43 years of ownership, now he's going to make necessary changes. It almost feels as if now that he's been exposed through the numerous articles that have come out from Buster Olney and Jesse Rogers, and there was the other one that came out before that. I'm blanking on who wrote those ones, but I almost feel as if I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, where is Jerry going to cut a corner?
Sure. And,
you know what I mean? Like, I'm excited to see new manager names. Like you had mentioned, Buck Showalter. I'm excited that Skip Schumacher's name is out there.
Yeah.
I'm not against Grady Sizemore. But, yeah, I almost feel as a fan like I'm just waiting for a corner to be cut somewhere, because that's happened so often here on the South Side.
I got you, Tom. Appreciate the phone call, man. And I think there's, I can definitely understand that kind of, if he's calling in from Crest Hill, kind of that crestfallen feeling, right, about where this season went and really where the rebuild went, right? Because I think, you know, talking about the 2024 White Sox really can't be done without talking about where the 2019 White Sox were, and where the 20 White Sox were, and where the 21 White Sox were, right? All of that informs just how much of an ending this season provided for a lot of different, you know, areas of White Sox life, business, organization, you know, philosophy, right? And I think, you know, to Jerry's credit, to the White Sox credit, I guess, what was in this statement, right, was words are cheap, talk is cheap, actions are what matters. And, you know, it's kind of why we spent the last little bit talking about, and I know Tom, you know, had heard it and was kind of talking about, yes, I believe in, I understand the infusion of development and cash, quite frankly, into the international market side of things, into the scouting side of things, the analytics department, all that kind of stuff. And that's all well and good. It is. Believe me, it is. I get it. However, you're not going to see those things benefit the 2025 White Sox. Not really. I mean, they will in some ways, but like not in the way that's going to be like, oh, that's the difference between 92 and 98 wins. And there you go. That's what you want. It's going to be more incremental than that. And that's kind of how baseball works. At least that's how it works until it doesn't. I think, you know, I talked about this some on last week's show. I think we can draw a little bit from the AL Central and kind of push it onto the 25 White Sox a little bit. And maybe that's what we'll do. Yeah, that's what we'll do when we come back here. We'll talk a little bit about those prospects, because I promised you some Paul Yanish on guys like Noah Schultz and Colson Montgomery and Edgar Caro. But we'll talk about that side of things as well. I'm Connor McKnight. You got White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
We are talking White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly.
If you missed the show, we put the podcast up on the ESPN Chicago app. So listen on your time.
White Sox Weekly. ESPN Chicago. Chicago's home for sports.
I think I speak for all Chicago sports fans of a particular age that when you hear Soulja Boy, the only thing you can think of is Devin Hester. Right? I think that about covers it. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, it was also like college house parties, which were all, you know, scrupulously maintained. I mean, I'm talking like we were playing like Uno, Jack. We weren't doing any of the things you're thinking about.
Of course.
Uno was big. Let's see, what else were we playing? Let's see. Just general bridge. I think bridge, pretty big game there at the college house parties that I attended. So it's either that or Devin Hester. Those are the two things you think of when
that makes sense.
I think those are the only things. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly, everybody. By the way, Celebrate 125 years of White Sox baseball and lock in a 2025 ticket plan today. Be here for the biggest matchups, exciting new promotions. Opening day, Thursday, March 27th. Plus, get access to the best seats at the best value, flexible payment plans, savings on single games, and more. To secure a ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2025. Got some stuff I want to get to as it regards White Sox prospects. Some stuff from Paul Janish, the farm director, that I thought was pretty interesting. Hey, congratulations to you guys. Well done. There's a bunch of weddings outside our State Street studios, and one just walked by. I'm very happy for them. I don't know them, but I'm very happy for them. The other thing I wanted to get to, though, real quickly here before the end of the show, was a piece, dropped by Jimmy Traina, Sports Illustrated media writer. I don't know Jimmy. I have read his stuff before. I like it. And he had a piece out there earlier today that says, the headline is, it's time for MLB to find a way to have local broadcasters call postseason games. And on the one hand, I couldn't agree with him more. And on the other hand, I think, my man, we do. We have it. It's happening. It's called radio. And listen, I get it's a little territorial, and I think you're probably thinking, oh my God, Connor, we get it. You like Lennon DJ. Like, it's enough. But all what I'm saying here is this. I told you earlier in the show that as the Brewers and Mets were getting down to the last couple innings in Game 3 of their wild card round, I flipped on the Brewers broadcast because I grew up in Wisconsin. I did not grow up a Brewers fan, but I grew up a fan of Bob Uecker and the Brewers radio broadcast. And I listened a ton. As I was walking the dog, I flipped on WTMJ and I was listening to the Brewers broadcast in the playoffs. And Jeff Levering had the inning where the Brewers went back to back with home runs, went up 2-0. Jeff is an exceptional play by play guy and has nothing but amazing things in store for him in the future. And he knocked it cold on those calls. He was fantastic. You felt the electricity in American Family Field. You felt Brewers fans going absolutely bananas for those back-to-back home runs, right? It was great. I listened to Bob Uecker in the ninth inning, and as the Brewers got, you know, absolutely slobber-knocked by Pete Alonso and that three-run homer. And after I listened to that, Len actually shot me a text of Howie Rose on the Mets broadcast calling Pete Alonso's three-run homer. And Howie absolutely slayed this call. He was, top notch. It was radio. It was baseball radio as baseball radio is meant to be done. It was note perfect. So when Jimmy Traina writes like, yeah, we should have more access to local broadcasters doing Major League Baseball games, I think you're right, man. Like, I get it. Baseball is a provincial sport. You are a White Sox fan. And probably for the last couple of minutes, you've been screaming into your radio, thanks for staying with us. Connor, I don't care about Bob Uecker or Howie Rose, right? But if the White Sox, the next time the White Sox are in the playoffs, I know damn well you want to hear Len and DJ and not a national broadcaster who is doing their absolute best but has parachuted into the situation and is forced to, for all good reasons, call it fairly and be on both sides.
Did you see the video from the Mets plane on Howie Rose's call? The Mets rewatched Pete Alonso's home run on the team plane with Howie Rose's call.
I didn't.
And the team gave him a standing ovation.
He deserves it.
After his call, and they listened to it.
He deserves it. He killed it. And that's not, listen, Boog Shambi, I love Boog. I love it when he comes around to the ballpark and we get to hang and talk and stuff. I am eternally jealous of the fact that he has an enormous iPad that he gets to score baseball games on and has all his notes there and works on one clean iPad in front of him. He's terrific, and he killed it. He absolutely killed it. But I agree with Jimmy Traina of SI in that baseball, and honestly, I think Boog would probably agree with this to a certain degree as well, right? Like, it's better when the guy calling this team or the woman calling this action for your team has been with you the entire year. That's what we do here. That's why I feel so passionately about it. It's because that's what we do here. That's what Len and DJ do for you every darn day of the season. And it's why I feel so passionately about it. And obviously, Jimmy's talking about local television broadcasts being able to call those games, right? And yeah, I agree with that as well. Reading through Jimmy's piece, there really aren't good solutions for this, right? I don't know that MLB or the individual teams or whatever networks that you're brought that you're talking about broadcasting these games are going to do like a simulcast, right? Where you have John and Steve broadcasting alongside Boog and Doug, and also Len and Deet. Like, I don't know that there's the market for that. There might not even be the literal bandwidth going out of a stadium and into a truck in order to do this. I suppose there probably is. It's 2024 after all. But it is something that I feel really passionately about, and I'm eternally grateful. And I think everybody here at the network is, that you can just press a button. And I'm not taking shots at anybody. I'm not, you know, taking passes at other broadcasts or whatever. I just think it's good that you have options as a baseball fan. You just hit the button on the MLB.TV app and listen to Len and DJ while you're watching the game. It syncs it up and everything. It's great. And you can do that for anybody that you're interested in. And it's something that, you know, listen, anyone's radio broadcast is very, very different than anyone's television broadcast. You're doing two very different things. Having done a little bit of both, I know that it's a little bit like a starting pitcher and a reliever, right? Yeah, you're doing the same thing, but the job that a starting pitcher has to do is incredibly different from what that reliever is going to be asked to do in a leverage spot in one inning, right? It's very, very different, albeit a similar skill set. So I was glad that from such a large and national platform, this got pointed out mostly to lift guys like Bob Uecker and Howie Rose, who have been doing this for a long time and are some of the best to have ever done it in both of their situations. But we've got this all season long. Like this exists for you. And if you didn't know, now you know. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. Just a little bit left here on White Sox Weekly. We'll talk about some of the top prospects. Well, we'll let somebody who knows a lot more than we do about the top prospects, Paul Janisch, bring it up when we come back on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Last little bit of our afternoon with you here on White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight, 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. Still time to slide in a phone call or two. The question to you all afternoon long, and we had some great answers from guys like Ron on the south side. Both Toms in Roscoe Village and Crest Hill, I think. Appreciate you guys all for calling in and hanging out on the show this afternoon. 312-332-3776. The question has been, what went most wrong for the White Sox in 2024? And you got to tell me what went most right for you from your perspective in order to give me the other side too. Because at 41 and 121, there are a lot of things to pick from on the left side of that column. And we got to work a little bit harder to find the silver linings, though I think there certainly were some of them. The next silver linings for the White Sox are going to be prospects, right? Guys that either saw just a little bit of playing time in Major League Baseball this year, guys like Sean Burke and Brian Ramos. More playing time for guys like Kai Bush and Jonathan Cannon and Drew Thorpe. But, you know, for the most part, had their auditions this season. I suppose Cannon probably came closest. Yeah, right? Jonathan Cannon probably came closest to making his full Major League debut, I guess, in a season. Corey Lee probably qualifies as that as well. He only played 1 month for the White Sox in 2023 and then really, you know, showed you what he could do, or at least the ups and downs, what he's capable of in 2024. The guys we've yet to see, though, Colson Montgomery and Edgar Caro and Noah Schultz are all the top prospects in the White Sox system. And Paul Janisch spoke a little bit about each one of them. Wanted to bring you some this on the guy that may well be the best pitching prospect in all of baseball. Here's what he had to say about the offseason plan for Noah Schultz.
Look, guys, the year could not have gone much better for Noah. You know, we had a plan in place. And again, I highlight the pitching department. You know, Brian Bannister at the top, obviously, but Matt Zaleski and our entire pitching department on the PD side, man, they had a plan in place that we executed that worked out, you know. And so going into the offseason, Noah just needs to continue to get stronger. I mean, believe it or not, guys, like he grew this year, right? Like he physically got taller. So he's added weight. He's going to continue to do so. He's got a unique build. He's long, and he needs to continue to kind of fortify that system and get physically stronger. I mean, the baseball side is pretty dang good, man. But fortifying him in a way that makes him, you know, even more able to endure a full season with the amount of innings we're going to ask him to throw is what that's about. But he's got his mind right. He's going to be out here in Arizona for the off season. So get him out of the cold and get him into a warm place to train.
That's Paul Janisch, farm director for the White Sox. And if you go to an MLB pipeline, Noah Schultz is the third highest ranked pitcher on that top 100 list. The first is Jackson Jobe of the Detroit Tigers, who is pitching out of their bullpen right now in the playoffs. Got called up shortly before the White Sox took on the Tigers in the last week of the season, last series of the season. Then Bubba Chandler, a right-hander working in the Pirates organization. He got up to AAA this year. Then Noah Schultz. Schultz is number 16 on MLB pipeline, and I think you're going to see him make a little bit of a jump when we get to the next re-ranking of the top 100 just before spring training or so. Schultz is the highest-ranked left-handed pitcher. The next highest-ranked pitcher, technically speaking, is Jack Caglione, first baseman out of Florida. He's a two-way player, and almost universally, he's regarded as a hit prospect first, as, you know, kind of a slugger, first base, outfield kind of thing first. But he does pitch, and from what I remember, I think he had like, I think he was 98, 99 with the Heat. I don't know that he has any idea where it was going necessarily, but you can get by in college with that. So we'll see, you know, where things go with him. And then, you know, Hagen Smith, the other dude, is another lefty in the organization, is ranked 30 on MLB pipeline and right there for you as well. Edgar Caro, maybe the top hitting prospect in the White Sox organization alongside Colson Montgomery, was asked about with Paul Janisch, and Janisch answered the question of how far Caro is from MLB ready.
Yeah, I mean, he's got himself on that radar, right? Like it's now it's just waiting for the circumstances, stars to align, so to speak, for him to be the next guy up. And but he's on the radar, man. Like from a development standpoint, is he done? No. Like there's some things that Edgar would tell you himself. He needs to continue to get his body into better shape so that he can endure a full season and some of those kinds of things. But from an ability standpoint, from a mental capacity standpoint, like he's as close as you can hope for a player to be, in my opinion. Now, there's nothing promised to any of them, right? Like he's got to have a good offseason. He's got to show up. He's got to be healthy and do all those things going into next year. But he couldn't have done more with what he had available to him this year, in my opinion, to be more ready to go to the big leagues.
Edgar, we've heard a lot about his bat and see the numbers. How would you evaluate his catching and defense ability?
Yeah, I've said this a couple of times. I do think he works at it, right, which is what is encouraging to me. Like, is he perfect? Is he completely ready to, you know, be as good as he can be defensively? And when I say that, like, at that position, there's more than just catching it and throwing it, right? Like, there's a game planning element that is significant, right? And so does he need to continue to work on defense? Yes. You know, can he get, you know, quicker and, you know, the arm strength can get a little bit better? Sure. But like, I believe the defensive ability and the makeup is what's going to give him the opportunity to play at the major league level. And at that position, give him the opportunity, hopefully, to, you know, to become an offensive player, you know, relative to his position. And it's that's asking a lot for a young guy, you know, to go up there and catch and manage what we can all agree is going to be, in all likelihood, a fairly young staff at some point. And oh, by the way, like go be a productive offensive player, have good at bats from both sides of the plate and, you know, adjust to pitchers you've never seen before and some of those kinds of things. But so the thing that encourages me about Edgar is his work ethic, his understanding that he's not done yet is what I would say relative to the defensive stuff.
Last one was on Colson Montgomery here and the strong finish he had at AAA despite a tough start.
Yeah, ultimately, we did have a little discussion, you know, about that time frame. And, you know, I think the best way to say it is the aspiration was really just to help him free up, right? Like, Colson's talented. We all know that. You know, he was struggling. I think, you know, he internalized some things with regards to frustration, and it was kind of snowballed on him at the end of the day. He was frustrated, irritated, mad, whatever you want to say. And that was the aspiration there. We looped in some of his support team as well, and just in an effort to make sure we all know, look, we're all on the same page here. We all want Colson to play well. And again, I give Colson credit because he was open to it and he embraced it. And then honestly, he applied it, you know, towards the end of the season. It was better down the stretch, hit some homers, got back into the middle of the field. And Even in talking to him, which I'm sure some of you guys have or will do, I think he would be open with you as well with regards to feeling freer, you know, but in the box again, feeling more athletic, feeling more dangerous, et cetera.
That's Paul Yonish, farm director for the White Sox, and I like the candidness which with he talked about Edgar Caro's struggles and improvements defensively, the distance he's got to come, and Montgomery's as well. I wouldn't be surprised at all if the White Sox added a veteran-type catcher to help her out Corey Lee in terms of both playload and development, and kind of keep a seat warm for Edgar Caro once he makes it to the White Sox, I would imagine, in 2025. You hear the music, though. We got to get up out of here. Appreciate you hanging out here on White Sox Weekly. Those of you interested and hanging around, we'll go to Mets and Phillies after this. Big thanks to you for calling and listening all season long. We'll be back next week from 1 to 2. Our shows in the offseason go down to an hour, but we'll be on every piece of White Sox news. Big thanks to Jack McGrath, our producer here in the downtown Chicago studios. I'm Connor McKnight. We'll catch you next week for more White Sox Weekly.